Ingle somebody brought me this morning. I'm glad I didn't tell you all my temptations. They might have got. Maybe I should. I see this test conducted every now and then in movies, and I don't know if it's a legitimate test or not. But have you ever seen the test where, you know, I say something and you give me the opposite? You know, so it's like light, dark, and up, down, and old, young, and male, cisgender, female, what's the name of that test? It's what do they call that? It's not the opposite. But anyway, you've seen that. You've seen Barney Fife do that to Otis, I think. So you do the opposite. But if I were to say wisdom, what would you say, maybe? Wisdom. If you look at what we looked at this morning, Jesus talked about the wise and foolish builders. So it's probably accurate. It's not wrong to say foolish, wise, foolish. And yet, I want to read to you just five short verses, because I think James sort of takes issue with that. And I think this is a very relevant passage for you and I living today. In James chapter 3, verse 13, he says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly and sensual and demonic. For where evil and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing will be there. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy." James, as you can see, he's talking about what does it mean to be wise. And again, we live in an age where, particularly with formal education, I think people conflate education and wisdom. And so James is talking about this, and it's very relevant to us because the Romans loved education. The Romans sort of liked to think of themselves as the Greeks 2.0. The Greeks developed philosophy, and the Greeks were very wise. And then the Romans came along, and they thought they took it up a notch. So you had a lot of wisdom, gnosis, knowledge. The great heroes among the Romans were the great orators, the great debaters who could get up there and really humiliate other people and you know, exalt their knowledge and win these public debates. And I think James is maybe a little worried that that's going to get into the church, that maybe the church won't understand what real wisdom looks like. And so here is James, and he's saying, I think not so much the opposite of wisdom is foolishness, or maybe he's defining foolishness, but really he's saying here the opposite of wisdom biblically is pride, divisiveness, and materialism. And notice here he says, verse 13, who is wise and understanding among you? So who are the really wise people? Well, let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. The first characteristic of biblical wisdom is meekness or humility. So pride, by its very nature, he's saying, is a sign that you're not very smart. You're not very wise if you're proud. And I think biblically, again, when you think about what he's saying, there's a lot of truth to that. I think James is saying, you might put it this way, that you can't claim to be wise until you know how dumb you are. I mean, if you think you're smart, you're not wise. Part of the thing that we tend to do, particularly in secular education tends to puff up, you know. And remember what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 8, love, pride puffs up, but something about love, but it says pride puffs up. Education tends to make you proud, which James says is the opposite of spiritual wisdom. You can't say again you're wise unless you've been humbled. Smart people, wise people, are able to look at the other side and see everything they don't know. You know? And what we know is like, I mean, of all the wisdom in the world, of everything you could know, we got to know, even if we're smart, less than 10% of it. You know, what we don't know is like the big iceberg, like 80 or 90% in the water. That's what you don't know. I knew a guy once and he was talking to pastors, and he said, you'll never be tempted towards pride. And of course, I guess everybody's tempted towards pride. But he said, when you speak to a congregation on Sunday, the truth of the matter is that if they come to hear you speak, and you're basically talking about the Bible and maybe theology, they know probably more about what you know than what you know about what they know. So if there's a mechanic, you know, in the church, you don't go to him and sit down for an hour and let him tell you about cars each week. You know, so you don't know anything about what he does unless you know a lot about cars. But he knows a lot more about what you know than what you know about what he knows, you know. And, you know, if you're a cook, you know, I mean, I don't know anything about cooking. I don't go to class each week to learn how to cook. I mean, if you know anything about cooking, you're way ahead of where I am. You know far more what I know than I know about what you know. And what he was saying is wise people are able to look at, I think, the breadth of knowledge. And the first thing that dawns on you is how much you don't know. And so true wisdom produces meekness or humility in the person who's wise. And then here, secondly, he says not only does true wisdom produce humility, but it also produces, well, let me read it. It says, but if you have bitter envy, ultimately, you're not wise either. When he's talking about bitter envy, the word for envy there is zelos, from which we derive the word zeal. He says, if you have bitter zeal, that's a sign you're not wise either. Now zeal is essentially a negative word, although in its context, it's neutral. But I think like 40, it's in the Bible 42, 44, 46 times, and only twice is it spoken of positively. So if somebody in the Bible, if somebody is called zealous, that's usually an insult. Paul talked about how he was zealous for the faith, and then it says, and that's why I killed people. Zeal is to believe what you believe so strongly, essentially, that you'll fight and kill somebody over it. You're full of zeal. It's not a good thing. And so James is saying, if you're wise, you know what you don't know. But if you're wise, you also are able to hold strong opinions in a peaceable way. You don't have bitter zeal. My dad used to like that illustration and would tell it a lot about the pirate on his deathbed. And they know the pirate is dying and he's been a, you know, terrible man, you know, lost his eye, lost his leg, just pillaged and plundered the seas, So they bring in a priest to try to, you know, prepare him for the impending judgment of God. And the priest is there and says, is there anybody that we need to bring in to reconcile? Is there anything undone? Is there any enemy, anybody that you've had issues with that we want to come in and you know, you need to reconcile with before you die? And the pirate says, no. And the priest said, surely after all you've done, you've got a lot of enemies. And the pirate says, no, I killed them all. Killed them all. A zealous person is a person who has strong opinions, but they don't know how to hold those opinions peaceably. They're not wise enough to know how to hold those opinions peaceably. So in zeal, what they know, they use for destruction. Now, again, I think James is saying is if we are wise, we know how to believe what we believe and yet have peace with other people in the process. And again, you and I live in a world where, boy, that if that's the essence of wisdom, we're living in an age of foolishness. I mean, you look at the shape of where we're going in this nation. I mean, people can't be in the same room together. And that speaks to me too, because I got some really strong opinions. But if I'm wise, I ought to be able, and this is what the Bible's saying, and so it's condemning me as I speak it. I ought to be able to be in the same room with people that don't agree with me on political and social issues and have peace. I ought to be able to coexist with people that don't agree with me. I ought not have bitter zealousness where it's basically me against them, and if they're wrong, I want to destroy and crush and tear them up. I can't be in the same room with those people. I mean, if I have family members that I know are very different than me on issues that are important, if I'm wise, James is saying, I ought to be able to have a nice Thanksgiving and we all get along nice together. Well, if we're wise, we ought to be able to pull that off. If we're not, that means we're fools. Now, having said that, there are a lot of people who think they're wise, and it's just that they don't have any strong beliefs. I mean, what James is saying is, if you're wise, you'll be able to figure out how to make peace with people that have varying opinions that you don't agree with. And a lot of people say, well, I'm wise. I don't argue with anybody. I don't fight with anybody. I can get along with anybody. Well, that might be because you don't have any strong opinions. That might be why, you know. I've been in the church at the tail end of a lot of transitions, and sometimes, particularly in the church I pastored before I came here, people would say, "It's so nice to have a church where we don't argue and fuss and fight about doctrine anymore." Because that church, you know, back in the day, you know, 20 years before I pastored it, you know, that they were very much under the dress standard and, you know, dresses on women and, you know, they have drag outs about whether a woman should cut or trim her hair and no jury, TV. I mean, they fought about everything and they had a lot of fun doing that, I guess, because they did it a lot. And but people would say, well, I'm glad we're not back there anymore. But a lot of the people who would say that, they didn't know enough to have a strong opinion worth fighting about. That's the kickback. And, you know, I grew up in the tail end of that time where 60 to 80% of the church came three times a week. And those were one-hour sermons. I mean, 2 hours on Sunday morning was the service, and at least an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes Sunday night, Wednesday night. So I grew up on the pew, and I played a lot in the pew. I don't know that I was that well behaved, but I was just there enough to absorb. I remember when I was 11 years old, I went to a Christian school, and it was a Baptist Christian school. Now, I'm not saying anything negatively about Baptist, so don't take this negative. But I can remember that 1 hour a day they would teach us Bible. And I was 11 years old, and I wasn't any smarter than the other kids in the church. But I remember the teacher once saying, "Now, when the devil fell from heaven, and my hand went up, it's like, that's debatable. That's debatable. The origin of Satan is not known. That's a debatable statement." It's like, I'm 11. It's like arguing about the origin. And she mentioned something about the millennial reign. It's like, there's different opinions on that. I don't think you're right. And then she mentioned eternal security. It's like, you're wrong. You're wrong. You can backslide. And I'm 11. But we were in church enough that even the kids knew enough to have a strong opinion. And I'm afraid those days are past to a great degree. I mean, if people come to church, 120 times a year as opposed to 35 times a year, you're just going to know a lot more. And I don't know how to get people where they need to be doctrinally and biblically if you can't get their time. But in that day, it's true, we probably fought and fussed more than we should, but it was because we actually had enough knowledge to have strong opinions about things. That's what I'm saying. So what James is saying is that it's a great virtue to have knowledge. It's no virtue to say, I don't fight with anybody if you don't know anything or know enough to fight about. But it's a great virtue to be able to say, I know a lot and I know enough to have a lot of strong opinions about a lot of stuff, but I also have enough wisdom to know how to get along with people that don't agree with me on those opinions that are very important to me. That would be a very wise person. So James, again, is saying, godly wisdom is humble, and godly wisdom is also freed from bitter zealousness. It's able to be wise. It's able to have knowledge, but not out to crush those who disagree with it. That would be the essence of wisdom. And then third here, godly wisdom is not self-seeking. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth. That wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. And man, I love how those guys bite. It's like, you're just not dumb, you're demonic. That's why. Which I get away with that sometimes. He says, so third, godly wisdom is not self-seeking. The word here in the Greek, as I understand it, originally meant that when it said self-seeking, it meant working for money. And then it began to mean only working for money or only working for the profit. So he says, godly wisdom is not just about making a profit in money or popularity or fame. And again, he's hitting on the educated people of the day who would say, I'm wise, I went to college and I'm out there making money and I'm growing in my career and I have the knowledge to increase myself. He's saying that's not the essence of godly wisdom. Godly wisdom is not self-seeking. Again, godly wisdom understands what's of value or not. I think James would say, you can't claim to be wise if you're brilliant and have given your life to making money, if that's the essence of your life, because you're not smart enough to know you can't take it with you. I mean, you're really giving your whole life for stuff that you can't take with you. So how that would not qualify as godly wisdom. You're working so hard and your whole life is about attainment and position. But none of that has an eternal value. How could you claim to be a wise person when you have zero knowledge about what's of eternal value or not? So again, James is saying, wise people, we need to be wise. And if you're wise, the first sign that you're wise is that you're very humble. The second sign that you are a really godly, wise person, that you are endowed with godly wisdom, is that you can have strong opinions and somehow manage to be a peacekeeper in spite of that. Another sign that you are endowed with godly wisdom is that you are not a self-seeker or self-promoter. In other words, you're not involved in life. Even though you're a bright person, your knowledge is not spent on things of limited value. You understand the value of things. And I think that's a good sign. I think that I know wise people. And I think that's a good description of people. And growing up, you knew some wise people, didn't you? Maybe they were the older generation. It's easier to look back and see the older generation, and I do that. I'm thinking of some people now who were wise in the highest sense of the word. They were really smart, but they were very humble. They were bright, and they were strong in their opinions, but they were peacemakers. They could have accomplished anything in life they set out to do. If they had wanted to be senators, they could have probably been senators. But they were very grounded and very aware of what had eternal value and what didn't. And they gave their lives to things that were going to matter when they stood before Christ someday. And that's the essence of godly wisdom. He says here in verse 16, "For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing will be there. But wisdom that is from above is first pure." It's pure. Wise people can stay out of trouble. They're pure. They have good consciences. Then it's peaceable. Wise people, again, know how to make peace. Wise people, wisdom from above is gentle. It's gentle. It's willing to yield. Again, we're going back to that thing of wisdom knows how to compromise. And notice that again. It's peaceful, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy. I mean, those are all sides with whether or not you and I can get along with people. It's peaceful, it's gentle, it's willing to yield, it knows how to make compromises without compromising the truth. It's full of mercy and good fruits. It's without partiality. And it's without hypocrisy. Again, in a world full of education, I think James is saying we ought to be wise from heaven. Not earthly, sensual, demonic, verse 15. But we ought to pursue wisdom which is from above. The signs of that wisdom are humility, the ability to coexist, to get along with people, and it's the ability to see the value of things, not be self-seeking. It's a small bullseye to aim at, isn't it? Hard to accomplish, but it's worth our time and effort to pursue it. The glory of Jesus Christ. Amen. Will you stand with me?